You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The Wire. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC for short, released their latest synthesis report earlier this month. It is the most recent summarisation of all climate reports over the past 5 years and states there is a rapidly closing window of opportunity to secure a livable and sustainable future for all. Despite the implementation of global climate mitigation policies since the previous synthesis report in 2014, the IPCC paints a bleak future where keeping global temperature rise to 1.5 degrees Celsius is nearing impossible. As seen here at home, the impacts of the floods in Auckland and Cyclone Gabrielle have been expansive and affected communities across the country. I wanted to see what Indigenous and Pacific academics perceived from the recent synthesis report and also understand where Indigenous knowledge can contribute to the discussion of reducing emissions and meeting sustainability goals. Firstly, to receive a Māori Indigenous perspective within Aotearoa, I spoke to Sandra Morrison, Professor in the Faculty of Māori and Indigenous Studies at the University of Waikato.
What findings stood out to you from the recent IPCC synthesis report?
Sure. Well, the synthesis report reaffirms what we already know, and what we already know is that our window of opportunity is becoming far more limited, and it also means that our buffer of resilience is becoming weakened. So when you have those two trajectories happening, then, you know, we're in a pretty dire situation, and it seems to me that our potential to face tomorrow is really dependent on what we do today, and we must accelerate all actions possible.
Following on from that, as an academic with an Indigenous perspective and experience, what relevance does the IPCC's report have to Māori and the Māori community?
Great question. Firstly, the IPCC is starting to validate and acknowledge the role, and the very important role, that Indigenous peoples and certainly Indigenous knowledge can play in terms of mixing and embedding is the better word, our knowledge in other knowledge systems. The IPCC, from a scientific point of view, we still take on that data to make it matter, and I guess to translate that so that it does have impact. And our messages are also always the same, that it's up to us to have deep respect for te taiao and the natural environment, and to think long-term and intergenerationally, and to make what many of us call mokopuna decisions for impact on our future generations. And I think the impact of the IPCC is equally important, as is our knowledge to IPCC reports as well. So I see them as going hand in hand.
In terms of implementing Māori values within policy making, how do you think the government can better integrate Indigenous values in policy implementation in regards to climate?
Yes, well, we saw with the Resource Management Act how kaitiakitanga was brought into some of that legislation, and that legislation is currently under review, and we hope that we don't lose some of these key messages in the reformed acts that are coming from the Resource Management Act. Our value systems are really important for everybody to follow, and they have benefits to everybody. Now, the other contentious issue is this issue about co-governance, and you know, that's a politically hot potato, but Māori do expect to be at decision-making tables, and to be able to bring our knowledge, our local knowledge of our ecosystems and our environment, to sit alongside other knowledge systems and decision-making. So it's at all levels, I think, that the government can work to ensure that emphasis is not lessened at all. We must continually uphold that, our relationship with te tiriti, most of all our relationship with te taiao, and as I said, to think long-term and intergenerationally.
And lastly, what disproportionate effects do Māori communities face or are at risk of facing as a result of climate change?
Yes, I think we've seen many of those examples post-Gabrielle and post the floods in Auckland as place-based people with deep relationships with our environment. It impacts on our spiritual and our physical health and therefore our morale, our disconnect from these sacred places or wāhi tapu that have been very precious to us. And also because we inherited the mental and the responsibility of kaitiakitanga, and when you can't fulfil that to your ancestors, I think that that will impose on one's spiritual health. We are likely to see increased disease arising from waterborne diseases. There's a whole lot of health risks that other Māori experts have already noted with climate change. Our Māori within water and other systems that are right now as close to health as we can get them will diminish. Again, that impacts on all of us, but more severely for Māori, because, as I said earlier, because of our deep relationships with the environment and because they've always continued to inform our health. We have the saying from the Whanganui River, ko te awa ko au, you know, the river is me and the river is our ancestor. And I think that that has some profound impact on how we see ourselves as part of the universe. So will underpin some of the disproportionate impacts that we'll be facing.
That was Sandra Morrison, Professor in the Faculty of Māori and Indigenous Studies at the University of Waikato. To understand the effect that climate change has on the Pacific Islands, I spoke to Dr. Christina Tausa, a political scientist and research manager for the Pacific Ocean Climate Crisis Assessment at the University of Canterbury. We also spoke about the measures that are being taken in Pacific nations to build their existing climate resilience.
What steps need to be taken to safeguard Pasifika and their regions against climate change?
I think local communities in the region have already taken steps to safeguard themselves for a long time now. And this is all, you know, part and parcel of Pacific people's resilience and their ability to adapt and mitigate to the impacts of climate change. And we have done this and have learned to adapt given the amount and magnitude of cyclones the region has experienced over time. So, and some of these steps include like replanting of mangroves and other trees that are not too susceptible to erosion. And we see in the Pacific, villages have, you know, started to build their own seawalls from the boulders from their communities. And we see in the example of the Cook Islands where they're using plastic and tires to build their seawalls. There's also a return to subsistence farming for food security. So many countries, you know, have already done their bit to help with minimizing climate change. But nationally, climate change should be a priority. And educational, health, environmental policies should actually reflect this in the different countries in the region. Regionally, a Pacific cooperation and collaboration require strengthening so that as a region, we're singing from the same songbook, that we are united in voice as a collective. And in terms of what we need done and how we want to be supported by the richer nations, we need to be coming out as a collective. And then globally, laws need to change and the richer nations need to be held accountable for their actions and inactions when it comes to climate financing. So no one is keeping them accountable and ensuring that they give what they promise to give to help with Pacific adaptation and mitigation in relation to climate impact. So communities, we're doing our bit, but it's just the regional and the global the community that now needs to do their bit.
So as an academic with a Pasifika perspective and experience, what relevance does the IPCC's report have to the Pasifika community as a whole?
So there is relevance for Pacific communities in terms of policy making and planning, particularly for the national and the regional level. And it's also, like, it's relevant in terms as well for developed nations to see the stats and the narrative behind the impacts that the Pacific communities are having to face due to the magnitude of impacts of climate change. But for Pacific communities as a whole, you know, they already and have been adapting and mitigating, and they don't need to be told to be resilient because they are resilient. It's part and parcel of Pacific culture. So apart from the policy briefs, for the region, not as relevant.
Could you explain how Western nations can learn from Pacific culture to reduce emissions and meet sustainability goals?
So Pacific people, have traditional ways of living, of fishing, of planting, of preserving food, of preserving water, of living within their means and only using, what is needed. Pacific people, we have a culture of sharing so that, food is not wasted, clothing is not, we recycle it through our own families. And this is something that Western nations can learn from. But more importantly, it's the harmonizing of our cultures and our worldviews and the way we do things traditionally and that of science and technology that will help reduce emissions and meet those sustainability goals. So, for example, Western nations don't have the traditional knowledge or the indigenous knowledge that we have as Pacific people. And as Pacific people, we don't have the technology that they have to help with our adaptation and mitigation. So it's just being able to harmonize those synergies, and then we'll be able to see a win-win situation where we can reduce our emissions and we can also meet our sustainability goals.
How do you think global actors can better support the Pacific Island nations and climate resilience? If you look at global actors and geopolitics that takes place in the Pacific, how do you think that some of those nations that are involved in the Pacific can better support these nations in becoming more resilient to the extremities that happen as a result of climate change?
Oh, there's a lot of things that they can do, especially our biggest donors and global nations as a whole. If we're looking at our Pacific communities, and we're trying to replicate what the Pacific is doing with their change in their practices, for example, a lot of Pacific communities have reduced and banned the use of plastics. They're reducing their gas emissions as much as they can. They're not even allowed to, light fires outside for some of our Pacific countries, and we're only producing what we basically need. So some of those countries can learn from our practices, but it's also in terms of when we're talking climate change, it's no longer just about, adaptation. It's no longer just about community resilience. When we're talking about climate crisis now, it is a lot to do with climate financing, and that's where a lot of those global nations can support. And we're not asking for climate financing so that we can, do what we want with the money. No, we're asking for climate financing because we can then look at the synergies between, like I said before, the indigenous knowledge and the technology, and then we can reimagine the adaptation and the mitigation and the resilience based on indigenous knowledges of the Pacific people, but with the integration of innovation and technology and science. And so once we do that, we'll then be able to What that will provide is options for Pasifika in trying to safeguard our lands, safeguard our environments, and basically our cultures and the moana that we call home. So we are already doing our bit as Pacific communities. It's just the global nations that now need to either replicate what we're doing and also provide that climate financing so that we can better safeguard and be better prepared for the inevitabilities of the climate crisis. When people talk about Pacific communities and climate change, they always only think of the economic and the environmental. But what we are also seeing is that culturally, it's that there's a huge risk of the loss of cultural heritage and the loss of identity and language. And so when we bring that into the piece, we then see that climate change is not just affecting our economies, our environments. It is affecting individuals as well. So, and I say this, like, for example, in Samoa, when we lose a mota or like a family meeting place due to, say, erosion in the seawater, although we can build another mota elsewhere, it will never have the same sentiment. And because it's not on the same sacred land that it once was. So in terms of the cultural aspects and the cultural loss due to climate change, it's huge. And it's something that we, as academics and as Pacific people, we need to try and reduce that and try to minimize as much as possible the effects of climate change on our cultures and our identity.
I think, you know, in terms of Pacific communities, they're not really aware of the impacts that climate change has on their communities back home. Could you just elaborate a little bit on what importance you think it does have to those Pacifica communities, especially young people in Aotearoa today?
Oh, hugely important. So a lot of the time in the media, climate change is reported, but from a very Palangi, from a very Western perspective, and so it's then not as relevant to Pacific people, especially young people, in terms of the impacts of climate change. But it's not until, especially it being in the diaspora, you know, being away from their communities, they're like, oh, no, you know, climate change doesn't affect us. But it's when they actually go back home, say, go for a holiday or visit their families, and they see the impacts, they see the erosion on their lands, they see the impacts on the environment, so they see how, you know, their traditional houses and their meeting places have been damaged by, you know, by climate change. It's then that they will probably say, oh, okay, now I understand the impacts of climate change. So just in terms of the impacts, yes, we may not feel it in New Zealand at the moment, being away from, you know, being in a diaspora, but it's when going back that's when you actually see the destruction that climate change has done, environmentally, you know, economically, but more importantly, culturally, for our Pacific communities.
That was Professor Sandra Morrison from the University of Waikato and Dr. Christina Tulsa from the University of Canterbury speaking to me about the latest IPCC synthesis report from a Māori and Pacifica perspective. We'll be back right after this short break. Here's Pull the Catch by Fat Freddy's Drop.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.